Father's Day is coming up, and I wanted to offer something useful to dads who are tired of living a divided life. So I'm hosting a live workshop called Become a Better Leader by Becoming a Better Dad. Here's the core idea. We are not two different men, not a work self and a home self. We are one engine. And when there's a crack in how we lead at home, impatience, disconnection, reactivity, it shows up at work too, just in a different form. Because the real issue isn't our behavior. It's the patterns we fall back on when we don't have anything left. I call that version of us default dad. He's the one who shows up when we're tired, overloaded, or distracted. And while that pattern is easiest to spot at home, it affects our leadership everywhere. This workshop is a practical playbook to help you catch default dad earlier, lead with more intention under pressure, and become a calmer father and stronger leader. It's free. Consider it my Father's Day gift to dads. The link to register is in the show notes below, or visit ambitiousdads.com. Welcome, everyone, to our newest Ambitious Dads podcast. Today, I have another incredible guest, Dr. Robert Melillo, who is both a wonderful dad and also an incredible neuroscientist. Robert, let me give you a chance to quickly introduce yourself, and then I'll dive into some wonderful fatherhood questions.
Sure. Yeah, I'm a clinician. I've been really specializing in neurology and rehabilitation for over 30 years. I have two very successful practices in New York where we work mostly with neurodevelopmental issues in all ages. I have a master's in neuropsychology. I have a PhD in developmental cognitive neuroscience. I started out my career as a chiropractor with a diplomate in neurology and rehabilitation. I teach functional neuroimmunology. I've been a postgraduate professor and researcher. I have over 100 publications in scientific literature. I have 8 best-selling books, and I do a number of podcasts, but I've been always, a professor, a teacher, and really it's all been all about brain development and understanding the development of the brain. And a lot of that was really stimulated as being a dad because each one of my kids were uniquely gifted, but also struggled in certain areas. I wanted to be able to help them and I wanted to be able to understand that. And I've carried that into now, helping, many, many hundreds of thousands of kids around the world.
Well, this is an awesome place to start. So first of all, so tell me about your family. You have 3 children. What are their ages? And please do tell us the connection between your work and your children.
Yeah. So my oldest is Robert. He's my oldest son. And, he was the first one that 2 things happened, which was interesting. In 1995, been in practice for 10 years. I've been, I had my specialty in neurology and rehab. And I was already doing brain research and teaching. And I came home one day and there was a woman sitting at my kitchen table crying that she had a son with ADHD and autism spectrum. And she didn't know what to do about it. And my wife had suggested that she meet with me and talk to me. I didn't really know much about those issues at that point. And my wife said to me, I know you're busy. I know you have a lot going on, but I just get a feeling you're supposed to do something with this. I believe in those kind of signs, but also as a husband, I'm listening to my wife if she tells me this, right? But a few months later, we go into the parent-teacher meeting for my son, Robbie, and sit down and teacher says, he's a great kid. I love him, but I think he might have ADHD. And now I'm shocked because this stranger is telling me something about my son that I feel like I should know. So I'm embarrassed. I feel professionally like, how do I not see this? I'm an expert in neurology and neuroscience. And, but I hear my wife saying, you're supposed to do something with this. So the question to me was, what is the issue? So right from the beginning, he was a great kid. He was very artistic, very creative. My wife is an amazing artist. And we had a lot of that, but he was very active and very social and he struggled in certain areas. But then my daughter came along and she was just great and bright. And You know, she was athletic early on, but she started singing from the time she came out of the womb, and she was incredible. But we noticed that she did struggle a little with handwriting and spelling, and she was a slow reader. But she was a very sensitive child and really great. Everybody loved her. But she would just sing constantly. And then when she was like, 6 years old, I took her to a concert for the first time. She came home that day and said, "Daddy, this changed my life. This is what I want to do. I want to be a singer, if you can help me." And then, we got her some music lessons and she started playing guitar. And then when she was like 9, 10 years old, she came down and she wrote her first song out of nowhere. And she, didn't ever read or write music. And then she just continued to do that. And we realized she was an incredibly gifted songwriter. And that's what she does for a living. She lives in Nashville, and that's what her podcast is about. But that comes with unique issues of social anxiety, self-esteem issues, self-doubt, imposter syndrome, depression, anxiety, eating disorders. A lot of things come along with that in that right brain dominant community. And then my younger son came along and he was the opposite. He was this really super hyperactive, very, like OCD, mildly on the autism spectrum, kind of almost a little Asperger-ish, very bright, very intelligent, but also super hyperactive, quick to anger, didn't read social cues so well. And so all of them had their individual issues, but he also is a great artist. And now he's a doctor who works with me in my practice. My older son is a builder. He uses these incredible visual spatial skills. He was an artist. He's a carpenter. He's a designer. And my daughter is a very successful singer-songwriter in Nashville. But all of them struggled with different issues. And, they all required, that we treat them in different ways. And it really taught me a lot about being a dad.
So, let's dive into that a little bit more. So, did you have a very different expectation when you kind of entered the journey into fatherhood of how you would need to be with your kids? And then as these unique characteristics of each of your children evolved, like it evolved both your parenting, it sounds like, but also your work. And can you talk a little bit about that?
It did. Yeah. It was because I was a pretty good athlete as a kid. So was my brother. So was almost everybody in my family. Almost every nephew and niece I have and my brother all had college scholarships to play different sports. I played football in college. My brother was captain of Villanova baseball. So, we were a very athletic family and we did well in school and none of us had any specific, issues. And, some of my nieces and nephews had some things, but most of them were, super, super achievers. And, my kids, my older son, he struggled, he was very great balance and he was, really moved well. But when it came to playing standard sports, I mean, he really struggled. He couldn't follow the rules. He would be like a deer in headlights. And I didn't understand it at all. I was like, wait a second, how could this be? He looks like he's athletic, but my wife was a great dancer and she, looked athletic herself. And I kind of just expected my kids were going to be like that. My daughter came out and she was more like that. And then same thing with my younger son. And they weren't really, like my oldest son, you put him on skates or a skateboard. He was incredible, but you throw him into a game and he was, and my younger son was like that as well, too. It was a little unusual and it started me asking questions about why would this be? And then when I started seeing other things, other behavioral issues, I was like, well, what's the relationship here? And so it started me asking questions that I don't think I would have asked. And that's what I think in my career, a lot of the things that I've done, I think has been because I've asked questions that other people may not have asked. And that really started with a lot of my, asking questions about, why my child would be struggling with this when I can see they're good in this. And these types of imbalances is really the nature of my research, these developmental imbalances in them.
You know, thank you for sharing that. You've worked with probably thousands of, at this point, of children with neurological and behavioral disorders. What role do you think fathers can play in early brain development? And are we underestimating our influence or overestimating?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're underestimating. I mean, obviously, moms are hugely important. And, you know, when you look at brain development, there's actually even some really good research showing there are specific windows. Like basically when we look at attachment, developing attachment, so emotional regulation, the right brain develops in those first 3 years. And, you know, for at least 18 months to 2 years, you know, the mother usually is the predominant one. And they're the one that's really developing these attachments, social networks, these emotional regulation, the ability to soothe, the ability to, you know, to nonverbal communication. But then around 2 years, the dad kind of becomes a little bit more of a focus, where now the physical component of kind of, you know, playing around, wrestling around, being able to, you know, interact in a different way. There's some research that suggests that like sense of humor is something that the child tends to get from the dad. These are also very right brain dominant skills, being able to kind of see the big picture and kind of, you know, again, other aspects of physical interaction with people. And dads, I think, play a huge role. When I'm working with a child with any sort of disability, you know, I always tell dads that when they're very involved, when they come in and the father can tell me, you know, I sit down and I ask the mother and I go through all of their developmental milestones and how was your pregnancy and what happened with this child that, you know, did they roll over? Did they crawl? Did they walk? When I get a dad that's on top of that and can tell me that stuff and knows it, you know, I always tell them that we get the best outcomes in the kids we work with when we have both parents really involved. The mothers are always involved and the mothers always take their lead, especially if the child has a disability. But fathers can often disconnect. They go one of two ways. They're often in denial and they're more concerned about how am I going to pay for this? Or they don't want to know that their child or that this is just a boy or this is the way I was and just leave them alone. And they go that one way, or they can jump in and be an incredible support system and really be there and work together with the mother to really help the child.
You know, that's an incredibly interesting and vulnerable point. And because I heard you say it earlier, this idea of like, you know, when the teacher first told you about your oldest son and you were like, how did she notice it before I did, right? And I totally agree. When something comes up with my kids, my first and I like instinctual thing, it's not what I act on. My first instinctual thing is like denial. Like, no, that person's wrong. I know my kid best, right? You say you see this directly with because you're dealing with, you know, some real hard hitting challenges with families and their kids. So what do you think we need to do a better job of as fathers in order to kind of go through that process, which might start with denial, it might not, but to get to, you know, you also hit this, it sounds like a little bit of a shame button, like, how did I not see this? Like, how long did you take to process through that to get to the point where you could be that support that you talked about as you hope dads will be when they're walking into your office? And what worked for you and what do you suggest?
Yeah, for me, it was more because of I was a professional and a healthcare professional. And I immediately went to, you know, well, what is actually happening in the brain? What is the actual problem? No one was saying that. And so for me, again, it started with that question, why? Why is this the way it is? And then what can I do to change it? And I think, you know, men in general, we tend to be fixers. You know, we tend to, you know, like a wife says, complains about something and we immediately want to fix it. And lots of times we have to not do that, right? Because women just want to be heard. They just want to vent. They don't have to always, we don't always have to fix it. But we're also good at that, right? And So again, one hand is deny it and just say, it's not there. You're crazy. You're an overactive mother or whatever. You're seeing things. Or you can jump in and say, okay, what do we do to try to fix it and work together as a team to be able to do that and be there. But, you know, there are definitely pressures because in those situations with the families I work with, and again, this isn't meant to be sound sexist, but the mom jumps in and she may have to quit work to be able to, you know, be there with her child. And the father may end up working two jobs to try to pay for this. And that's also a real dynamic. And that's, you know, a heroic thing that the dad is doing, but it's also really difficult on both of them. And so that sometimes happens as well. But it's mostly about, you know, in most cases, dad need to really listen to the moms. When the moms say there's a problem, there usually is, and just help to try to see what the solution is. And don't deny it and don't argue with her over it. Just how can I help? That's the best thing they can do.
I love that. And it's true. And I recognize that in me too. At first, I do often want to deny it, but then that takes me just a couple of minutes to get past that. And that's for whatever reason. I'm sure there's lots of psychological work I could go to figure that out. But let's dive a little bit deeper into this too. So you often talk about functional disconnection in the brain, right? Between the right hemisphere and the left hemisphere. And I'm curious, maybe if you can explain it in very quickly, but also how can modern fatherhood, like, you know, modern fathers, we especially ambitious dads, we are constantly distracted. We are constantly overworked. We, too many of us don't necessarily know how to express our emotions particularly well. How does this contribute to the functional disconnection that we see in our kids, if at all?
Yeah. Well, first of all, in everybody at any stage, all of those things can be changed. We all have strengths and weaknesses. And the more strengths you have, the better you are at some things, the more vulnerable you are to have a deficit in some other area. Most people can compensate. Their strengths overcome their weaknesses until they may not, right? And that may, you know, peak at a certain point. You know, when you say ambitious dads, I think the way I interpret it, and tell me if I'm wrong, you're talking about people that are pretty successful in certain areas, I guess maybe, you know, in their work or in their career, in their job. And, you know, people that are successful, they have areas of their brain. When someone is more talented or intelligent or, you know, is really super good at something, what does that mean? Generally, the basis of it is that there's an area in the brain that does a certain function. Someone's really good at math and they're really, and they become a great engineer, or somebody's an incredibly good software designer, or somebody's an incredible athlete or musician. What does that mean? There are areas of the brain that do those functions, and the connections in those areas are a little bit stronger, a little bit faster in people that are really good at that. And usually that starts out as a family trait. It runs in the family. You know, just like your height and your hair color and your looks, and whether you're right-hand dominant or left-hand dominant, or whether you're more of a right-brain dominant thinker or a left-brain dominant thinker. We all are either one or the other, but obviously the goal is to have them very balanced and to work together. They should be a flow in our brain, and that develops the first 3 years. The right brain takes the lead in development, and then the left brain takes the lead for the next 3 years. And in those first 6 years, it shapes the foundational differences of the right and left brain. And that is the way it's supposed to be. But at the end of the 6 years, they should be balanced and integrated. Now, we also know that they should be very different. And that's a great advantage. One of the key advantages of the human brain is we have the most lateralized or asymmetric brain that gives us effectively two brains in one, but only if they really work together. And one side shouldn't gain too much of a dominance over the other. If it does, it blocks the flow. And that's what a functional disconnection is. And we see an accentuation of certain areas where they may be overactive. And then we see a deficit in the other. And those things might be deficits. So we see our struggles, whatever that may be. And then we see other areas that might be too much. Like if someone's obsessive or compulsive, that's usually overactivity of certain networks on one side of the brain. Their ability to stop those thoughts, their ability to regulate those thoughts, their ability to regulate their emotions, you know, are also other areas on the other side. And the ability to read other emotions, to read social cues, to be able to read the room, to be, you know, emotional intelligence is more of the right brain. The left brain is more the factual, detailed, intellectual intelligence. So you get somebody that might be, again, really good. They're an engineer type brain. They're super bright. They can do calculations in their head. They're maybe very good at reading, very goal directed, very organized, very linear, but not so good socially. Don't read people as well. Not great at relationships, and, you know, might tend to have some anger management issues and, you know, not really regulate their emotions as well as maybe they should. And maybe not as good, not as in touch with their own body and their own feelings. And that may be more of a left brain dominant style. You get another person that's right brain dominant. They might be very social, incredibly good at reading people, extremely creative, and very bright in many ways, but they may struggle with basic reading and doing math or remembering details or facts. They may, you know, struggle with over emotions or being overly social, of right brain emotions of things like fear, embarrassment, shame, guilt, fear of rejection, sadness. These are right brain dominant. So when we look at any disorder, like if you look at depression, what is depression? What does that mean? The left brain generates joy and pride. The right brain generates sadness and guilt and shame. When you have too much sadness combined with guilt and shame and a lack of joy, that's major depressive disorder. That's the definition of it, right? So, but anybody struggling with that, we can change it. And it may, and we can do it without losing the gift.
So it, in that context, for all of these dads, right, that are challenged with being exceptional in one aspect of their lives, typically their career, right? That is the ambitious dad's component. And then struggling on the other side of their lives, whether it's their own emotional regulation when they suddenly realize that they have to deal with toddlers that also can't regulate their emotions. That tends to be when we sort of discover our inability in that area, or just our constant distraction and being pulled in so many directions. How is that contributing, if at all, to the impact that we're having on our kids, let alone the impact that it's having on us?
First of all, you're going to take traits to your child, right? So whatever you're really good at, you're probably going to pass that on to your child. But whatever you're bad at, you're also pass on, right, to a certain degree. And they may have a more extreme version of you, you know, and that's not always a bad thing. You know, we look at traits and a bell curve. And most traits fall in the midline, right? They're average. Average height, average IQ. And that's where most people fall in that average realm. But some people are above average. Some people are exceptional. Two standard deviations above the mean for IQ is we consider genius level. But what if you go beyond that, right? Now, if you have two extreme versions of that trait, at a certain point, it's an advantage, but at a certain point, it becomes a sharp disadvantage. And so recognize that a lot of what you see in your child is a combination of the genes they get from you and the mom, and that may be there. So if you struggled with dyslexia, they may struggle with that. And if you struggled with ADHD, they may have an even stronger version of that. But mostly, remember, you're giving them a gift. Like what you may, they may be even more talented, even smarter, or at least that potential is there. But they may struggle more. And it needs to be addressed. It can be changed. You can't just manage it behaviorally. You can actually change their brain and create more balance in their brain. Anybody that's super gifted is more likely to be unbalanced. But you can achieve that at any point. And I always say that, you know, for me, being a parent is really being aware that you are the example and you need to be present. And when you say intentional, I love that term because, again, I talk about balance in not only in the brain, but in your life. And you need to have a balance as a father. You know, you get somebody who is driven and they're very goal directed on making money. And they figure, you know, I'm going to make money and I'm going to be successful. And that's how I'm going to support my family. And I'll give them everything that they need. They'll want for nothing. I remember I had a guy in my town that was like that. He told me I grew up poor and so did my wife. And I went to Wall Street and I told her, I'm going to work. You stay home with the kids and I'm going to go and I'm going to make more money than anybody else. And he did it. And then he turned and said to me, and we gave our kids everything they wanted for nothing, and we ruined them. Right. Because he wasn't present as a dad, and they just threw material things at them. But they didn't, both of them were grossly overweight and unhealthy. You know, they weren't really happy. They didn't give any structure to their kids, and they just spoiled them with money. And the kids ended up having substance abuse issues, overweight, unhealthy, you know, severe behavioral issues, legal issues, a lot of things, right? So, you know, you have to look at everything. You have to be there. You have to be the example. I always tell parents that, you know, I've never met a parent when I ask them, what would you want for your child, right? They say, I want them to be healthy. I want them to be emotionally healthy and happy. I want them to have a great relationship and be in love. I want them to have a great career that they love doing their job every day. I want them to be, you know, happy. And I say, great, of course, that's what every parent wants. And then I'll look at them and say, are you that? Is that you? Do you have a career that you love? Are you in a good, solid relationship? Are you happy? Or are you depressed and on the couch or angry or unhealthy? You know, because you can say everything and you can give them everything. But the bottom line is they're going to look at you. You're their example. And so when you're being intentional, you have to be intentional in everything. That I want to be the example of what a good relationship looks like with their mother. You know, not arguing, not fighting, and treating her with kindness. Kids remember that so much in their dad.
You know, I love what you're saying, in particular in two areas. One, this idea that, you know, we all have these strengths, these gifts, and also these weaknesses, and recognizing that we are going to pass on both, and in that context, become and be very much aware of what those weaknesses are, so you can help correct them with your kids. But also something that I think everyone enjoys about the work and the books that you write, which is that we can have an impact, right? Once we discover these things, there are techniques that you work on, and there's obviously techniques that the fathers and parents can work on. That feels really impactful to me, because I think a lot of dads feel, in particular when they get overwhelmed in fatherhood, we feel like, oh my God, I didn't even recognize some of these weaknesses that I had, some of these things that need development in me, and I can already see I'm causing those same things in my child. And to hear you as a neuroscientist say that, well, it's never too late to create that change in your kids, and obviously not in you, that's a really powerful takeaway. So I really appreciate that a lot. What do you think are a few things maybe every dad can do to support their child's brain development, especially in their early years?
The most important, single most important factor of brain development is movement. Being able to move your body, exercising, you know, or even just being outside moving. So, you know, that's where like the dads take over, like in the toddler level, you know, when the boys want to wrestle and run around, or even the daughters or the girls. I mean, my daughter wanted to be everywhere her brothers were. And if I was throwing them a ball in the backyard, she was there killing it, you know, and she could do pull-ups better than them. And, you know, and what I did was, a lot of with dads, it's about, again, being the example, right? You're not going to, when I always exercised, but, you know, I didn't want to, I was working very hard in my practice as a young man, and my wife was three kids and overwhelmed, and I wanted to give her a break on a weekend as best as I could. I wasn't going to spend my time going to a gym, but I wanted to work out. So I'd go down and we'd watch Saturday morning cartoons, and with them on the couch, and they were just around me. But then I would use them as weights. Like I put the big one on and I do push-ups on my back. And then the middle one, and then the little one. And then I do that a few times. And then I do like dips with them holding them, or, you know, they'd be hanging off me when I was doing pull-ups, or, you know, I do sit-ups with them hanging on me, or, and so I'd use them as part of it. And they loved it. They were just like, they felt like they were just, you know, being with me and touching and connecting. And then they started imitating me, and then they started doing it together. And then I would go for a run and they'd all get on their little bikes and let's go for a run. We never told them or said, you have to exercise, you have to go out and run. But all of them do that now. So they're all in their 30s and they all do that. They're all in great shape, and it became part of their routine. And I think, you know, I always tell dads, like when the mom's doing all this stuff, if you can do push-ups, get on the floor, do some sit-ups, and again, do it with them. Don't just say, go down there and do this, but make it fun and be an example. Movement is so important to overall health, but it's also the single most important thing for brain development. And so starting early on and doing that and making it fun and being enjoyable, that's a big thing that I think most dads can get behind and go, yeah, I can do that. You know, I can do that. And I even have fun doing that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely go to the gym, not so I can look fit, but so I can wrestle on the bed with my kids without pulling a muscle. And so I totally agree. This weekend or last weekend, we were at the pool because it's hot here. And my oldest was so sad because he has basically aged out of me being able to throw him in the pool because it's just too big. But my youngest isn't. But you can just see how much that they love that sort of, not just like physicality, but touch, right? Like they really love, I mean, and they ask to wrestle on the bed almost every night. And there's some interesting research that I saw that even said that, believe it or not, wrestling before bed actually gets them in a psychological place to go to sleep, as opposed to what you would imagine where it's the opposite, that it's waking them up because it's all rowdy. So, of course, now we do this almost every night before bed. That's really, really cool to hear.
Well, listen, you know, without, again, sounding, but you can't imagine a lot of moms doing that, right? Like you don't expect a mom to get that and like throw their kid on the bed and jump on them and wrestle around with them. You know, moms are doing everything else, but, you know, that is a role that dads automatically kind of take on. And it is important, like you said, that touch, that physical. I mean, that is actually the foundation of social development. How do little kids learn how to interact and how do they learn how to socialize and build those networks? Males have a little bit, on average, more of a dominant right brain, right? So males tend to be, you know, more visual, spatial. We tend to be more physical. And, you know, that's the hunter-gatherer lifestyle. That's kind of, you know, the role out there. And women tend to be a little bit better in more left brain skills, verbal skills, fine motor skills, more detail-oriented type of stuff. But their brains tend to be a little bit more balanced than us, or we tend to be a little bit more lopsided. And that's, you know, And giving that to our children and helping build their right brain. You know, in neuroscience is a statement that the left brain gives you success in school, the right brain gives you success in life, building attachments, building emotional regulation, resilience. These are all right brain functions. And dads play a huge role in building those right brain when they do that. But as you said, you know, there are some dads that are so left brain dominant, and that's a natural trait. And they're usually brilliant, but they're usually a little bit disconnected emotionally. And they're also, they may lack a little self-awareness. Like, they don't realize that they're socially awkward. They don't realize that they may say things that might be a little rude, and they may, you know, and they may not realize that. And what happens is a lot of dads then don't recognize that in their child. And they'll say, no, you know, because there's something called metacognition. We judge ourselves accurately. The right brain dominant tends to overjudge ourselves, judge ourselves as less than we are, and feel like everybody else is judging us. Left brain dominant people tend to overjudge their abilities, that they're better than they are. They don't see their weaknesses as much. I remember I had a dad one time and a mom, and this was early on before my books and everything. And so this child had primarily high functioning autism, and the mom was doing everything to try to help the son. And so she said, you know, can I bring my husband in? Because he's, you know, has questions. He likes data. He likes research. And he wants to really talk to you about that. And I said, all right, I get that. I'm a researcher. So yeah. So he came in, and the dad's asking me all these data research questions. And I'm like, okay, but I got a feeling from him. And I said, you're not really interested in this, are you? And he looked at me. I said, you actually don't believe your son has any problem. And he said, yes, that's true. I don't believe my son has a problem. I think he's just like me, and I'm perfect. Wife looked at him like, oh my God, you have no clue. I thought she was going to kill him. She was going to like tear his head off, because she realized he was scamming her the whole time. But he didn't realize, you know, he was really socially awkward and didn't realize it, but he was very intelligent and always was told his whole life he was gifted, and he made a lot of money and he was very successful. But he struggled on that emotional side of, and he was very deficient, but he didn't see it. He wasn't aware of it. And he didn't see it in his own son. And so he was, you know, he thought his wife was just making this up. That's some things that we can see.
Well, that's a powerful challenge, right? I mean, I recognize that I didn't see a lot of my like emotional difficulties before I had kids, but having the kids definitely made it very visible to me. For the fathers who still don't necessarily see it at that point, is there like, what's your recommendation in that context?
Well, two things. One is, you know, my book Disconnected Kids has been a pretty successful book. It's just in the third edition from Penguin. And I always tell parents, if you really want to learn a lot about this, read the book, even if you just read the first five or six chapters or so. But look at it also from the perspective of you as a child, right? Not just as your child, but what does this tell you about you as a child and your brain development? Because ultimately, the fate of the adult brain is in those first 6 years. And then that's superimposed on your natural strengths and weaknesses and family traits. And all of that comes together to make your brain. And whatever is there is, you know, your strengths are going to tend to get better. Your weaknesses may tend to get stronger. And you're trying to have some imbalance. You know, we all have weaknesses. We all have strengths. If we can keep our weaknesses and just minimize our strength, I mean, keep our strengths and minimize our weaknesses, but you have to be aware of them. You have to be open to them. You have to be aware that you may have weaknesses. And, you know, being aware of the way that you think and the way you see the world. So I think it's just being open and willing to
look. Yeah. And I really like, you know, it's a very interesting lens just to say, read this or think about this, not in the context of your child, but just in the context of you, might provide just enough of a different angle for some folks to really have that light bulb moment. So I really appreciate how you frame that. So because of your experience and expertise, you know, dealing with children that might be on the spectrum or with ADHD, if we as fathers suspect there may be an issue related to this with our children, what are some of the first steps that you would advise, both kind of practically but also emotionally, for the dads?
Yeah, and it depending on the level and the issue, one is to really educate yourself about the reality, and again, without sounding disparaging. Most people out there that they're going to come into contact with, most of the professionals, don't have all the information, and they're going to say things to them, and they really don't understand the problem, and they're going to tell them things like, just accept it. There's nothing you can do about it. And, you know, it's just the way your child is. And, you know, and that's not true. It's not true. And because very few people out there really understand how human brain development is unique and what can be done. The other thing that's confusing for many parents is that they'll see these kids with these imbalances, they are really good at certain things, like exceptional. And that's true with maybe some of the parents as well. They may be super good at certain things. And they feel like, well, I'm really good, so there can't be anything wrong with me. And I don't even want to use that term. You know, why should I be struggling with emotional issues? I guess everybody does, because, you know, but the more talented, the more gifted, the more strong you are in certain traits, the more likely you are to struggle in others. And to be aware of that, that just because you're so good doesn't mean you can't struggle. And same thing with your child, just, you know, because they're really good in some things, they may struggle, but that's part of the nature of it. And that's, they are gifted and you can change that. And that can be very confusing. And so, you know, the traditional attitude out there is, well, let's just focus on the child's strengths, ignore their weakness. And that actually dooms them to make sure that problem never goes away and gets worse over time. That think in terms of balance, a balance in your life, balance in the way that you're going to be there for your kids, and helping to balance their brain and their nervous system. And that's your role, is to be aware of that, educate yourself about that, but understand that the brain, you know, unless there's a brain injury or a genetic mutation, which there almost never is. None of these disorders are caused by genetic mutations. It can be changed significantly. And the earlier you get involved, the better. You know, paying attention to early milestones matters. So just understand that a lot of information you're going to get out there, people are just trying to keep you calm. And they're just trying to say, okay, just, you know, keep calm, accept it. This is the way it is. And none of that is really true.
Does that also mean that we should look inward at ourselves too? You know, obviously this imbalance comes from what I understand from you, it's like the nature versus nurture, and it's coming from nurture in so many respects. So when we suspect something of our kids, they're around ADHD or other neurodivergent challenges, should we also be looking at ourselves and questioning, you know, where are some of these weaknesses that we've talked about during this podcast already? And maybe that can contribute also to how we help improve the situation for our children?
Yeah, because, you know, if you have imbalances, and again, remember that imbalances always start with an unusual gift and strength, and that's wonderful. But if you can create balance in your own brain, it's going to help your child also, because the biggest influence on your child's brain is your brain and your wife's brain. right? Mom and dad's brain, like what's happening in your brain literally creates what we see in their brain. You know, there's been studies showing that if a mother is depressed when she's pregnant, and if we do EEGs on her brain and actually measure hormones that are markers for that, and then the child gets born and we can look at their EEG and hormone patterns and they match the mom. If the mom changes that, if the mom gets out of the depression, the children also do, right? So that is like this connection, this physical and mental connection that you are resonating with them. And so if you can change your own balance and listen to me, I think in life, we should always be trying to get better. You're always trying to get better in your life. You're always saying, how can I get better? How can I be a better person? How can I be a better dad? But also, how can I physically be better? How can I mentally be better? And ultimately, really everything comes from the brain. The brain is the source of everything. So understanding, you know, most people know more about their heart than they do about their brain. Most people, the one organ they don't know about is their own brain, which is kind of weird, right? Because you would think our own brain would know something about itself. But, you know, they don't understand, even if they are a right brain or left brain dominant person, and how that relates to how we form attachments. And what about my wife? And what is her attachment style like? And what are we passing on to our kids? And, you know, how do I relate to them and understand to them? And what are going to be her strengths and weaknesses? And where might she struggle so I can understand that it's not about me. It's about her and her brain. And how can we work together to improve that and always try to achieve balance? We're never going to be perfect, but we can try. And it really starts with our brain and understanding that more.
I love that. And you know, in a similar vein, I think you've developed a preconception program, right, to help reduce the risk of like autism and ADHD. How do you think like we can prepare emotionally and mentally for fatherhood that can really play a role in this sort of preconception?
Yeah. So all the things that kind of RFK is talking about now, I wrote in a book in 2013. I was the first person to ever publish a major book on looking at, and you can't really prove prevention, but you can talk about lowering risks, right? So we know that, like in the book, I identify 50 well-documented risk factors that elevate the risk of having a child. And so by looking at those, and most of those risks are modifiable. And most of them have to do with your physical health, like level of stress hormones, your level of exposure to toxins in your body, you know, vitamin levels, food sensitivity, immune markers, you know, vitamin levels, all of that. But again, number one is being familiar with your own brain and your own style. You get two left brain dominant, you know, parents, and you're at risk of having a child with a right brain deficit. So we know that, you know, Simon Barry Cohen out of Cambridge showed in the 90s that, you know, in families of people with autism, there were many more engineers and physicists and mathematicians. He also showed that people in the finance world, and then later on showed that in the IT industry, especially, and there was, you know, people that were higher rates of autism. So like Silicon Valley has the highest in the world. What is that? Well, it means that all of those jobs favor people that are left brain dominant, that have a left brain cognitive style, and they're good. And that's a good thing, but that's a predisposing factor, right? Now it's not a mutation, it's a trait. On the other hand, dyslexia and bipolar are people that are more creative traits, the right brain traits, right? So being aware of that and saying, okay, we need to look at other risk factors. We need to try to balance our brains before. We need to, you know, lower stress hormones. We need to get our immune systems in balance, lower our inflammatory markers, you know, make sure our vitamins are good. Our balance of hormones is in the optimal place, you know, and being aware of all of those factors. And those things can be modified and changed. And with that, I believe that it will lower the risk of you having a child with a disability.
Thank you. What, you know, if you had to give maybe one message to ambitious dads that are trying to raise emotionally healthy and resilient kids today, what would it be based on all of your work and your own experience raising three children?
And I think it's that message is that, listen, first of all, you know, you're out there working hard. I don't think, you know, we get enough appreciation. That's hard. That's a lot of pressure every day to go out there. And especially if you're the only one working in your family. And often, like I said, with a family with disabilities, they have to do that. But, you know, so that's understandable and it's great. But again, look at your whole life. You know, are you happy with your health? Are you happy with your relationship? Are you happy with, you know, all the different parts of your life? Are you happy with the interactions that you have with your children? Do you spend enough time with them? And if you don't, look at all of that, because you are setting the example in all of those things, and your child's going to follow you. If you're struggling with your relationship, they're probably going to struggle with relationships, and you're building their attachment style. They're watching you. They're mimicking you. Are you in good health, or are you really overweight or unhealthy and really struggle with that? That's what they're going to be like. And nobody wants that for their child. You know, are they, you know, in their career, are you successful, but are you all consuming in your career? That, you know, is your career also making you happy, or is it causing a tremendous amount of stress in your life? And do you want that for them? Because that's the example you're setting. So just that awareness that your intentions are great and we understand, but you need to look at the whole picture.
I love that. And I think that's one of the things that modern dads are trying to take on more than anything these days, is being more holistically minded towards their roles and where they invest their time. One final question. We have a bit of a tradition here where I love to ask, because fatherhood is also super messy. And so I've been asking all of our guests to tell us their most ridiculous fecal related story, having to do with your children, of course, not your outside interests, but if not fecal, something just ridiculous body related that you dealt with when your kids were young that just really makes you smile and maybe also thank yourself that you're past that stage.
That's a good one. I have to think about that a little bit more closely. You know, I do remember just, you know, early on, we had a babysitter, and you know, she came over, and she was a friend of the family, and you know, we had three kids, and this was our youngest one, and you know, she called us up kind of screaming because she was going to change my son's diaper, and he peed right in her mouth, and freaking out. My wife and I were like, oh boy, you know, that's a pretty good shot though, right?
Oh, yes, that's exactly the type of story we love to hear, because it's just like, yeah, there is no rhyme or reason for some of these things. It's just well-timed on behalf of our babies. Thank you so much. You know, my biggest takeaway from our conversation is a couple of things. I guess I have two. One is that there's always the opportunity to make like change and improve like our kids' mental state and capacity related to anything neurodivergent based on your research. And then also that we as dads need to look in the mirror first and also see how just directly our engagement, our strengths and our weaknesses play a role in all of that. And I think both are just really powerful action items and next steps for us as dads. So thank you very much.
My pleasure.